Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 106 of Wheat All About It, or what I've entitled, An Example Others Can Follow, Inspiration from Black Hawk Down. Every year, staff at the Washington Association of Wheat Growers search for a speaker at convention outside the traditional, a person who will provide a unique perspective about navigating life. In 2016, an Air Force pilot recounted his years in a North Vietnamese prisoner of war camp. In 2017, a global strategist looked ahead to a changed planet. I created podcasts from both of those presentations. You can find episode 4, The Charlie Plum Story, and episodes 54 and 55, Hang On Tight, The World According to Peter Zion, by going to the Washington Grain Commission website at wagrains.org and navigating back through the podcast summaries. That's episode 4 and episodes 54 and 55. They're well worth it. At the 2018 Tri-State Grain Growers Convention held in November at the Portland Airport Sheraton, Kenny Thomas was the featured speaker. Thomas is a singer and songwriter today, but for purposes of his convention speech, he was a member of Bravo Company of the 3rd Rangers Battalion of the U.S. Army, working an operation in Mogadishu, Somalia in 1992, when all hell broke loose. For those of you who aren't old enough to remember 1992, the battle that became known as Black Hawk Down began with good intentions. The U.S. Army had initially gone into the country to protect food shipments that were being hijacked by various warlords, resulting in millions dying of famine. In the battle that Thomas uses as context for lessons we can all appreciate, it begins with Army Rangers in Black Hawk helicopters raiding a square building to capture the bad guys. Everything goes like clockwork until it doesn't. The battle lasted for 18 hours. Thomas spoke for a little more than an hour. This podcast is 25 minutes. In the end, I decided what was important about the battle wasn't the battle, but the lessons Thomas learned, continues to learn, 26 years after the event. With more than 1,000 presentations behind him, Thomas tries to tailor his message to each audience, hoping to find what will resonate best and be most helpful. He ultimately chose an approach farmers could appreciate.
I'm going to go with the three things that are key to mission success. And in the Ranger Regiment, they teach you. The first one is planning. We'll talk a little bit about the planning process. In other words, knowing what your mission is. Because if you fail to make a great plan, you can plan on failing. And everything's mission-based. When we're clear on our mission, we're clear on what's expected of us. And people fight for the mission. They don't fight. Well, you know, people. That's what people... It's not the what you do or the where you are. It's why you're doing it. That's what people will fight for. All right, and then we're going to talk about training. In the military, we call it train as you fight, fight as you train. And then mostly what I want to concentrate, though, is the third element of mission success, and they make it very clear it's you. And we could call that the people, but we call it leadership. The Ranger motto is Rangers lead the way. And they never told you that's a rank. It's not a pay grade. It's not a shiny thing on your collar or the stripes on your shoulder. It's the example that you are setting for the people you serve. So that's what I hope you get from all this. You can get whatever y'all gonna get without what you want out of it. It's like going to church. But what I hope you get from it is remembering to ask yourself when you look yourself in the mirror in the morning, man. Oh yeah, I'm supposed to go out there and set an example for others to follow. And the key to that is knowing that you're qualified to do that, because we just get too, I don't know why we do it, but we all sell ourselves short and we forget how important we are. But when we realize that there's people on our left and our right that are counting on us, that's when we'll step up and we start figuring out, okay, what example am I setting? So that's what I hope you get from it.
Thomas describes his 5-man squad, but I've simplified his narration to include only descriptions of Doug, the squad leader, and David, the weak link.
Doug is the squad leader. Doug and I had the exact same rank. Doug looked the part. Like, he was an athlete, man. And he and I had pinned on our stripes at the same ceremony, and he got the title. Like, he was squad leader. And Doug was my best friend, but why am I not a squad leader? I went to platoon sergeant. I said, Sergeant Watson, how come I don't get to be a squad leader? Why does Sergeant Bourne get to be the squad leader? And to this day, the only answer I was ever given, because he's from Texas. Yeah. Which brings me to David. David Floyd was from South Kakalaki, Carolina, somewhere. Some of y'all in this room know who Barney Fife is. Like, picture that, because that's what he looked like. He did not look the part, and he was not easy. He was a spitting image of Private Fife in body armor. Like, he was about this big, 140 pounds, just awkward. Like, I grew up in the South, so my mom would call him a bless your heart, right? Which is, it's the nicest thing you can say when you see him. You're like, oh, bless your heart. He's like, hey, Sergeant, how you doing? And he was just, you had to push him. And you had to coach him. And you had to mentor him. And you had to spend that extra time with him that most of us don't want to spend. Why? Because we got our own problems we got to deal with. Yeah, it's tough, man. And I as a young team leader, basically, I just wasn't patient. And I have my own ideas of what set the example for others to follow meant, right? I can tell you all day long that leadership is the example we set, but then you got to ask people, well, what does that mean to you? And what I thought it meant was, watch how good I am. It's performance-based. Especially when I get out here and I start talking to a lot of these companies that are sales-oriented, you know, pharmaceuticals and things like that. Like, everything's sales, and they think that leading is putting up high numbers. I thought leading was just shooting better than David. I thought leading was running faster than David. I thought it was, watch me shoot, move, and communicate. Why can't you do this, man? I showed you once. This is ridiculous. Come on, let's go. And I would just kind of do it myself and drag them along with me. Sergeant Watson, my platoon sergeant, was way more concerned with raising leaders than he was having a squad full of just studs who could shoot, move, and communicate. And he called me in his office one day. He goes, Sergeant Thomas, what's going on with Private Floyd? I'm like, I know, Sergeant. Why don't we just move him over to the motor pool? Let him, he'd be good over there. He goes, no, Sergeant Thomas, that young man's my most important asset. I'm like, how's that, Sergeant? He's because he's your machine gunner, and as good as you are, you can't do it all. You need him, and you need him to be the best machine gunner he could be, because if he isn't, your squad is weak. And if your squad is weak, Sergeant Thomas, my platoon's crippled. And if my platoon is crippled, I can't send anybody out on the mission. I am as good as my weakest link, and my weakest link right now is you. What he was concentrating on was not my shooting and moving and ability. The weak link was that I wasn't leading correctly. So I went back and I reassessed the way that I was leading, and I went back and I started spending more time with David. And I coached him, and I pushed him, and I mentored him. And I, you know, in addition to our own problems, we do have those, I admit that. But part of the burden of leadership is helping others. Got to do it. That's how we all got where we are. What I find amazing about how we do our process in the military, which I still have not found anybody out here in the real world who's even remotely as efficient as we are in the special operations community at implementing plans. Every single person in the platoon knew exactly what was expected of them. This is just the call, the play call. It's like the NFL. Ready, break. Like, we're all heading to the aircraft. Nobody's doing this, which is like, hey man, that was just a square. What was my mission? What am I supposed to do? Should we send out some emails and have a meeting? There's a reason I didn't do very well when I got out of the Army and tried to get a real job. I was like losing my mind. Everybody like, hey, we should have some more meetings. I'm like, ah. And but what I care about when you wake up in the morning, the reason I'm still out here on the road doing this is because I really do care what kind of leaders we're all being. And when we look ourselves in the mirror, we've got to know our whole planning process comes down to one thing. It's the mission. Knowing your mission. Because when you're clear about who you are and why you're doing it, then your choices become so much easier, and you can stay focused. And the mission statement is almost generally, it's a pretty easy thing to come up with. It's the 5 W's, who, what, why, when, where. You can come up with those, you got a good mission statement. And when you have a mission statement, you know what's expected of you, then you can start implementing planning and your training so that when the mission is called upon, you're ready to go. Training is the second thing. Train as you fight. Because you're only going to fight like you trained. You're not going to magically get better out there, you guys. You can't. And if we're really honest with ourselves, a lot of times we all train We plan for best case scenarios, right? We kind of think, yeah, it's going to work out. We'll figure it out. And sometimes the enemy gets a vote, man, and they change the plan. So you better have practiced and be ready for whatever's coming at you. Y'all, I'm not making this stuff up. The coach, if any of you coach Little League out there, you're going to tell your kids the same thing, man. We're going to practice like we play. Your piano teacher, she used to tell me the same thing. You will practice like you play. We go to church on Sundays. The pastor is going to tell us we will reap what we sow. If we sow greatly, we reap greatly. We go to counseling with our spouse. We're going to get out of it what we put into it. That's all the same thing, y'all. We train as we fight. We fight like we train. Planning and training. And then it comes down to the third element, which is what I talked about in the front end of this I wanted to concentrate on, which is you guys. And that's leadership at every level. Not just the big guys with the rank and the titles and the CE suites. It's everybody. When you can instill that leadership culture in everybody from the bottom all the way to the top and from the top all the way back down, you've got something pretty amazing and something extraordinary that most people don't have because they're so wrapped up on hierarchy. And they think being in charge means leadership. But when you can teach a guy like David Floyd that he's being held responsible for other people's lives and livelihoods by the way he does his job and his willingness to accept that responsibility, man, you've got something going on. General Garrison's got a job to do. He's an important guy. Colonel McKnight has a job to do. He's an important guy. Captain Steele's an important man. Lieutenant DiDomaso is an important guy. Private David Floyd is in charge of nobody except for himself. But if he's being counted on and expected to set the example for others to follow, then you're firing on all cylinders. And your planning and your training and your leadership are ready to go. When they call you, man, you know what you got to do. All right, I beat that up, but it's important. We're setting up a story.
Four helicopters come in at each corner of the building with rangers roping down to the street and attacking. The bad guys are captured. Trucks come to take them back to base. Shortly after they leave, the first of the two Black Hawk helicopters are shot down.
I can't believe this is happening. Because that's Chief Walcott. He's not supposed to get shot down. And we're all doing it. And you know, I get it. That's a human thing. We do it. I can't believe it's happening. But it is happening, y'all. And the sooner we can come to grips with the fact that it's happening to us and it's not good, the sooner we can figure out who we're going to be in that moment. Notice I didn't say the sooner we can figure out what we're going to do. Because what we do is dependent on who we think we are. People who believe they are part of something bigger than just themselves, and people who believe they are part of a solution, and people who believe they've been given that responsibility of taking care of those on their left and their right, will step up. And it's okay if you lead in those situations, if you know what you've got to do. And it's okay if you follow in those situations. Maybe you don't know exactly what you've got to do when a crash comes up, but you know what? I'm good with my hands, or I can cover you with a weapon, or what do you need me to do? I'll cover you. You know, we've all been in those situations. Hey, I'm here to help. We lead or we follow, but otherwise get out of the way. Like, if you want to know what doing nothing accomplishes, go hang out in Washington, D.C. for about a month. And you will see what nothing means. Because they stand around and they're not part of the solution. They're part of what we've it's part of what we do now. We point fingers and we blame and we want to know what. It's like, hey, I don't have time for that. There's people in trouble. And I don't think doing nothing means cowardice, y'all. I don't think people are cowards. I just don't think when we don't know what to do, we default. And when we default, we start making excuses. And it kind of looks like this. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe that that's happening. Oh, I hope they're going to be okay. And then the only reason I can stand up here and preach on this, y'all, is because I know I do it. I know I do it. Man, somebody ought to do something about that. Mm-hmm. And I hear that voice in my head that says, Kenny, somebody ought to do something about that. Who do you think that somebody is? And usually, 99% of the time, when it's happening to me, it's happening to people around me. And if I don't become part of the solution, I'm part of the problem. So I figure out, can I lead in this situation or can I follow somebody who knows what they're doing? But I don't do nothing. Nothing accomplishes nothing.
Armed Somalis begin to converge on the side of the downed helicopter. Thomas's squad moves out to rescue survivors. Then Doug, the squad leader, the Texan, gets hit.
We're getting a little bit behind the power curve. I'm like, Doug, I'm moving. And I pick up the go, and Doug's not following. I look back, and he's bleeding. He got hit. And he's like, I'm hit. And the medic runs back to Doug and starts working on Doug. And Sergeant Watson runs over there to Doug. Sergeant Watson maybe spent like, I don't know, like maybe 20 seconds over there. And he grabs Doug's radio, the squad radio, and he hands it to me. He goes, hey, Bourne's been hit. We got to send him out. You're in charge. And I took the radio from him, and I know I had that look on my face, which was... Because he started laughing. He said, Sergeant Thomas, look at me. He goes, take a breath. We train you to do that, man. When you get stressful, the quickest way to slow things down is to take three deep, deep breaths. Get some oxygen going in there. It will change your metabolism. Take a breath, Sergeant Thomas. You're in charge. And he let go and he moved on down the road. He didn't have to stand around and wait to see what I was going to do. Y'all, we don't have to be happy about the soup sandwich that we get handed. We don't. It's going to come our way one day. And all we're doing is standing around complaining and making excuses. Man, this isn't my responsibility. Yeah, it is now. I didn't ask for this. I know you didn't. And here's my favorite one. It's not my fault. Well, it's your problem, by God. And what are you going to do about it? Like, right now, we need you to take charge of the situation. And if you can't take charge of it, then give it to somebody else who can and follow them. I already knew what I had to do. You don't have to be happy about it. I took a deep breath. And as people start going down, this is when I saw a shift happen. You would think what you would see is what you normally, like the movies love showing that guy, right? That freaks out when people start getting hurt. And, oh, God, it could happen to me. Oh, you know, like starts peeing on himself. Like, who's? I've been over there 9 times, y'all. I've not ever seen that in any of our forces. None. Not once. I don't know who Hollywood followed around, but like the French Army or something, but it wasn't. It wasn't our people, because they all know. They know whether they're the crew chief of the C-130. They know whether they are the truck driver for the Abrams tank to transport it over to the battlefield. They know whether they're the gunner. They know whether they're the pilot. They know whether they're the stormtrooper kicking indoors and tagging bad guys. We all know our part can't be done without the other people. We all know that we are important because we're taught that. Now, the first guy I went to was David. David was pulling security down this alleyway. Saransky's over here in the corner. DeJesus is over there. I went to Floyd first. I'm like, hey, buddy, look at me. Because he's looking over his shoulder over Earl Fillmore's body. Because David knows the same thing I'm thinking. Man, if it happened to Sergeant Fillmore, it happened to me. I look at David and say, hey, buddy, I need you to concentrate on these two guys. You take care of them. One game at a time, y'all. One game at a time. If we start getting overwhelmed by the hugeness of the situation, you won't make it out of here. So you concentrate on the basics, which is take care of each other. It's what we would all rather have. Like, we've been taught, and it's a shame. Like, I've been telling this story for a long time, you guys, and it has evolved for me. And where I'm at now, my walk and my life and my faith, is that it's a shame that we had to lose someone as good as Eric for me to understand what I've been taught since I was little at Sunday school, no less. You are your brother's keeper. Take care of one another. It's a simple, simple, simple thing, but it's that difficult for us to pull off. I don't know why we're no good at it. Because you know what I think it is? I think there's a lack of trust out there. Wouldn't you rather have that person who you know is on your left, that you know's got your back? They're not going to divorce. They're not going to not show up. They're not going to get sick. They're not going to call in. They're just going to, man, I got you covered. I don't have to love. We didn't have to be best friends. It's got to know I can count on you. And the person over here has got your back. And what it does is it frees us all up. We don't have to save ourselves. And man, saving ourselves is exhausting. And it's futile. It doesn't work. We spend so much energy worrying about saving ourselves. Some of us are better at it than others. You know, we're faster. But you'll never get further. No one takes the hill alone. Got to have those people around you. And at this point, who are the people around you when it's really getting tough? It's our friends. It's our family. It's our neighbors. It's our community. You know, now it's not, when it gets tough, we can have an opinion about who's in charge. We can say things about this party and that party and who's not doing what up on the hill. But ultimately, in the end, if we're not taking care of one another down here in the trenches, who's gonna?
The squad is held down overnight, but with night vision goggles, they have the upper hand. With morning coming, the odds will change. They get orders to move to a football stadium 2 miles away.
So we take off running. It starts working. It's working for a little bit. And then that you guys know what it feels like. When I call it the suck meter, man. When it starts tacking into the red, you start doing stupid things. And you don't even know it. The research is very clear, you guys. You think you're multitasking, and you think you're on the phone in traffic, and that you're moving along with everybody else, and you can't figure out why everybody's honking their horn at you, because you're not multitasking, because you're not focused. There's something going on that's got your attention, and the research is clear. When we get in stressful situations, we do this, and we're no different. Guys stop doing things they shouldn't. They start doing things they shouldn't be doing. And now we're starting to spread out a little bit too much. We're starting to run a little too fast. We're getting a little bit crazy. And this captain all of a sudden stops. And he looks over across the road and no one's covering for him on the other side of the street. And he starts tunnel visioning. Why isn't anybody covering for me? And he gets on the radio. Hey, where's the other lead element? And everybody else is back here yelling at the captain, freaking out. And he's backing all of us up. Hey, sir, push across the road. We're all getting... Nobody's paying attention to the big picture. Except for one man. Somebody better do something about it quick. And by God, it did. Bless his heart. David Floyd steps right out in front of me. Sergeant Thomas, look out. And David shoulders this big old machine gun that he had been carrying for his buddy who was wounded. And he picks that thing up and fires it. Down the street. And we all turn like deer in the headlights. And it's this guy. I don't know how any of us didn't see it. It wasn't like the guy had just appeared out of nowhere. He had snuck up the alleyway and was standing there with a rocket launcher, point right at us. His other friend was fixing to reload the rocket. David Floyd, I don't know if David hit the guy or not, but that first burst that he was able to get off startled the guy, and he misfired, and the rocket kind of went like that. That's what it did. And I went, that kid just saved my life. Actually, he just saved all of our lives. And I wish that I wrote in my journal the very next day, word for word, it was, I wished I had something more leader-ish to say to Floyd. And the best I had for him was, good shot, Floyd. Roger, sir. Now, why David Floyd? That kid woke us all up, y'all. And I'm not telling you that Private David Floyd changed the tide of the battle, but I tell you, I believe we all woke up and we realized we were moving too fast. And we all started slowing down and took a breath. And slow is fast, right? Because smooth is always a little bit slower. So slow is smooth, and smooth is always faster because you don't have to come back and police up your mistakes. By the grace of God, all 30 of us made it out of that run. And I'm going to say it started with David Floyd. Why him? If you had asked me that morning, who's the least among you, I would have told you our weakest link was not me. That would have been my answer. Me. And then I would have been like, it's probably David. But we're working on him because, you know, I'm a really good team leader. And I'm spending time. And I'm doing this leadership model of coaching him. Here's what was lost on me. First of all, I think the weakest link in that moment was probably me. Because I saw what was going on. And what was I doing? I got caught up in the fray. And I was doing what everybody else was doing and yelling about somebody needs to do something. I could have ran over there and covered for the captain. I could have ran over to the captain and told him to move across the street that he was bunching people up. He didn't even realize what he was doing. He was task saturated. The second thing that was lost on me was that David Floyd never, not once, saw himself as the weakest link. That was my ego. David saw himself as a leader. And he saw himself as a man who was responsible for others as a machine gunner in third squad. We say something enough, you guys, we begin to believe it. And when we believe something, we live it. Which is why I tell people, stop with the whole, I'm an ordinary person. And that's just, notice I did not set this up as, here's a story of an ordinary guy like you who's done the extraordinary deed. I feel like that's, I'd be selling you a lie. Because one, you're not ordinary. And two, neither was David Floyd. When people know who they are, David believed he had a skill set. What did he do? He didn't do anything we didn't teach him to do. He got to the corner of the building. He pulled security. He looked. Granted, we don't teach you to fire the machine gun from a standing position. It's not stable. And we sure don't teach you to fire the machine gun over the heads of the captain. He doesn't like that. Which brings me to the second part of this story and why I ended it the way I ended. Why didn't the six of us do what we should have been doing? We had decades of combined experience on David Floyd. Operators, sergeant majors, captain. Why didn't we all do the right thing? Because leadership is a choice, y'all. We make it on a daily basis, yes. And we make it with our mission statement, and we understand. We can put it up on the walls all day long, but if we don't believe it and live it every day, moment by moment, it's a choice we make. You've got it in you, you guys. And I know it's not easy. That's the thing I want to... I don't stand up here and pretend to say, hey, just do the right thing. It all works out for you. You already know that that's not the case. You can do the right thing 100% and then some, and they're still going to bash you. They're going to stand over there at the water cooler and talk bad about you. They're going to stand over there and be like, did you see what they did? Hey, what's Bill doing down there? What's he getting? He's getting like 221 an acre. Yeah, but Bill's a cheater. You know, like, they're going to stand around. They're going to come up with, they'll hang you up on a cross, man. Doesn't matter how it's not always easy to do the right thing. Because when we need you is when it's tough.
Returning to life in America is a tough transition for many, including Thomas. He was tasting success as a songwriter and musician, but his time in the Rangers, especially the Battle of Black Hawk Down, has remained the touchstone of his life. He was reluctant to tell the story until a friend told him to stop whining.
You don't have to be happy about the soup sandwich that they've handed you, but you got to own it. Because if you don't own it, who will? None of us are in a position to tell our story the way that you've been given that microphone. You better figure out what you're going to say. You better take that responsibility seriously, my friend, and lead well. Jeff was right. So I learned how to tell this story. And this is where it evolved. You would never have, if you had asked me 10 years ago where I would be right now, I never said, when I grow up, I want to be a motivational speaker. That's what I want. Like, who in the world even knows what that is? But I can tell you, if you want to be successful at it and you want to be good at it, here's what you do. You tell people what they already know, because then you'll think I'm smart. And all I've told you is exactly what you already know. I told you, please make a good plan and have some contingencies and understand your mission when you wake up in the morning, that you're part of something bigger. And God gave you all these gifts and talents. Somewhere along the line, here you are, because your story matters. So live it. Write yourself in as the hero. And you're going to get, every hero screws up. And then on the other end, they come out doing things great because they did it. Why? For themselves? No. Did it for others.
Thomas has several albums and a book entitled Get It On, referring to the donning of gear when going into battle, not the other thing. Google KennyThomas.com for more information. That's Kenny, K-E-N-I, Thomas.com. I hope you enjoyed episode 106, or what I entitled, An Example Others Can Follow, Inspiration from Black Hawk Down. Taken from a presentation given by Kenny Thomas, a participant in the battle immortalized by a book and a movie, at the Tri-State Grain Growers Convention, which took place November 14th to 17th, 2018, at the Sheraton Airport Hotel in Portland. Please join me again next week for another episode of the Washington Grain Commission-sponsored podcast of Weed All About It!
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.